Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, sponsored by the audiobook edition of Will Eisner, A Spirited Life, now available on iTunes and Audible.com, and recorded live on blogtalkradio.com from the new media and the oh-so-briefly American League Baseball capital of the world, St. Petersburg. One of the most daring challenges in writing novels for young adults is probably transferring the four-color escapades of superheroes to narrative form and still retaining the boldness and glory of the comic book medium, while still, of course, adding meat to the bones of the structure. And I think Thomas E. Snegowski accomplished that and more with his new novel Legacy, detailing the generational handover of the Raptor Crown. Legacy is a rip-snorting good role in the costume character Hay, adult enough to pull teens and fanboys along into slightly more mature literature, while still capturing the intrigue and answering questions about powers and abilities in the real world. Of course, Snegowski should be able to pull this off. He's successfully written for both genres, young adult novels and comic books, for many years. He is the author of the Fallen books, which were adapted into a TV movie for ABC Family Channel, as well as the Sleeper and Owlboy series. He's also written comic books for everyone from Marvel, Image, and Dark Horse to Crusade and London Knight Studios. Tom, welcome to Mr. Media.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Now, who didn't know that when I finally felt confident enough about saying Snegowski, I was still going to trip over my tongue?
See, you're thinking too much. That's the
problem. Yeah, I know. Believe me, the thinking too much, it's not a crime I'm guilty of all that often. How are you?
Good. I'm very good.
Well, so Legacy. I mean, I guess that's a more profound title than calling it Hand-Me-Down Costume Blues.
Exactly. Actually, if I thought of that title first, I might have used it.
Well, I better write that down and trademark that immediately. Hand-Me-Down Costume Blues. All right. Well, if you want to use it, you'll have to add me to the byline, okay?
Okay.
That's not bad. tell me about how the story occurred to you and developed.
Well, I think it probably started in the germ of my love of comics. I mean, I've been like a comic book junkie since I was a little kid wearing a towel with a badly drawn S on the back of it, around my neighborhoods and things like that. And I don't know, I think it probably came out of the fact that my love of comics has been with me for so long, and having been exposed to so many people who just didn't get it. Mm-hmm. You try to get that point across. These are the coolest things in the look at this Fantastic Four comic. This is the greatest comic you'll ever see in your life. And they just I'm gonna go watch TV. I'm gonna go play a video game or whatever. And I think Legacy kind of grew out of that. It's almost as if I want to show people who read books, the world that. The stuff that's going on inside my head, how cool these ideas, these mythologies that have been created in comic books, how cool they can be and how nicely they can translate into the prose form. I think that's probably it. I mean, it's like it was great to turn in the book, or even in the process, even prior to turning in the book, the discussion process with my editor at Delacorte about the book. She was never a comic book reader. So it was kind of like me kind of saying, come on into, let me open this door for you. Come on in. take a look around. Isn't this neat? Isn't this really cool? And I really do think that in editing that book, working on that book with me, it kind of opened her eyes to a lot of really fun and interesting things that she's never really paid a hell of a lot of attention to.
Is it weird to talk about superhero costumes and powers and all that stuff with, you know, with someone who deals with a different world.
With a non-believer?
Yeah, basically.
It is, because you can tell that there are certain things that are just so, you know, of course that's how it is, you know, to me. You know, and I'd get to, like, sections of the book, and she would be just, like, totally confused by something, and I'd be, like, rolling my eyes and disgusted. What do you mean you don't know about that? That's a popular trait of comic book heroes, you know, and she knew nothing about it. It was kind of like I never knew that they all had, like, you know, secret bases and things like that. But, you know, it was just really, really interesting, because I always had to kind of step back and say, well, wait a minute. Of course she doesn't know any of this stuff. You know, so it was almost like I always had to remember that I needed to take her by the hand and kind of show her around a little bit every single time we would get into, especially in the editing process of the book. Because, again, there were things that I just assumed that everybody knew, that she would say, what about that? I don't understand that. And I'm like, what do you mean you don't understand that? You know? So it was an interesting process.
Well, I was curious about that, because I make my living doing nonfiction books, writing. Uh-huh. I work with CEOs and entrepreneurs, and
okay. It
inevitably I get an editor who, you know, is good with grammar and spelling and structure, but doesn't understand how that world works. And I figure, you know, you're dealing with young adult novel editors, and
mm-hmm.
and I'm sure, even though that, you know, they may know the latest book by Sarah Zarr, they don't know, you know, they don't know what's happening over in you know, Astounding X-Men.
Exactly. Yeah. And again, that I think that was part of my job, to kind of, like I said, take her by the hand and say, let me introduce you to something you're not familiar with, and I'll try to make it as easy as possible, and maybe you'll even find this interesting. And I think she did. I think she did really enjoy the ride.
Did you have any moments where you thought, you know what, okay, I'm geeking out a little too much here. I need to rein it back in and remember I'm an adult, she's an adult, and I'm not sitting around with the guys at Comic-Con right now.
Well, you know, the thing is that whole I'm an adult thing doesn't really enter into my day. You know, it's like, I mean, what I do for a living is basically, you know, enjoying the stuff that, you know, that other people have as a hobby. You know what I mean? I'm living it. I mean, I'm spending, like, for example, right now I'm writing the second book in the new Bone novels for Scholastic Books. So I'm, like, on the phone with Jeff Smith all the time. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, I'm living the dream is pretty much, you know, I know how goofy that sounds. It's completely cornball, but for somebody who's grown up on comics and loving, you know, movies and monster movies and things like that, I couldn't be doing a better job. You know, you kind of have to pinch yourself a little bit every once in a while.
Oh, I'm absolutely in deep envy of what you do. I think that's great. I would give up the side that I'm doing to do that in a heartbeat. So yeah, I can appreciate that.
So the whole adult thing, I gave up on that nonsense a long time ago. It's like, nah, that's boring. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to write about monsters, you know?
It's great. Listen, it's great work if you can get it.
Oh, definitely.
So what can we tell – I'm always cautious about this. What can we tell people about Legacy without giving away too much?
I like to always say Legacy is a book about what if the deadbeat dad that you never knew, who was never part of your life, has suddenly come back into your life, and, oh, yeah, he just so happens to be this world's equivalent of Batman, and he wants you to pick up the family business because he's dying. And I usually just leave it right there.
That
usually makes people go, huh, that's really interesting. I wonder where that goes, you know, so.
And why didn't I have that father? Dan?
Yeah, exactly.
Without, you know, giving too much away about the plot, let's just leave it at, yeah, I mean, that's the dream, isn't it? That, you know, one day someone knocks on your door and it turns out your father is not your father, and your real father has, you know, incredible powers given to him by the Earth Sun. And, you know.
It was also incredibly wealthy, you know. So
you gotta have that.
Yeah, you add that on there, plus, you know, superpowers and incredible wealth, and wow, you know.
Now it's interesting to me that you said that, you know, you mentioned kind of that this world or that world's Batman,
mm-hmm.
which absolutely I get completely, but because of the names of the characters, I actually kept coming back to Marvel's Falcon.
Yeah. I mean, I think I was kind of playing with that Batman mystique, you know, with the raptor, you know, being a bird of prey and stuff like that. So I was kind of playing. It's kind of like Batman meets Iron Man, kind of when you kind of meld the pieces together, as well as probably 900 other obscure comic book references that are rattling around inside my skull most of the time.
Okay, but here's a question I have for you.
Okay.
And you answer it in your book with Raptor, and I don't want to give too much away. We can understand how Raptor gets to the top of tall buildings.
Right.
How does the Batman get to the top of this building? Because he doesn't have jet, you know.
He doesn't have the accoutrements.
I mean,
I think Batman does it with the Batarang, with the grappling hooks and stuff.
Yeah, but you don't get up a 7,500 story building with a grappling batarang. I mean, you know, are there people when each night when Batman goes out to start his carousing? I mean, does he take the elevator? Does he walk the steps? You know, to get to that tallest building in Gotham? I completely buy into him swooping from one tall building to the next tallest building to the, you know, I mean, lower and lower.
Right.
So by the end of the night, he's exhausted, but he's gone from building to building. But to get to the top of that first building, he's got to take the elevator, or he's got to take the stairs, right?
Yeah, I would imagine so. Yeah, I would imagine. There's got to be a little bit of that here and there. I mean, actually, having that aspect makes it even more interesting, because it's kind of like, oh, wow, he's just like us. You know, he's not Superman. He didn't just fly up to the top of the building. He had to take the stairs.
Yeah. This is one of those conversations I imagine you and your editor having, and the editor getting off the phone and going, what the hell have I been talking about for the last hour?
Or she just starts crying.
Yeah, well, yeah.
what have I gotten myself into, you know?
I've reduced a few editors to tears that way, so yeah, I can see that. is it harder to visualize superheroes in text like this without an artist rendering?
Definitely. Just because of the fact that you're doing all the heavy lifting. See, when you write a comic book script, a lot of the times you're writing the script and you're getting to a point where, you know, you're not even you're describing something in such a basic state that you just kind of step back and say, all right, artist boy, do your magic. You know what I mean? It's like you get the words right, you know, and with your dialogue and things, but you pretty much leave all the heavy lifting to the artist because it's a visual medium. I mean, yeah, you need the two things to go hand in hand and to work perfectly well with one another, but the first thing that you see about a comic is the artwork. And, you know, that's a lot of the times you just kind of – I mean, I can't tell you how many scripts that I've written that have said something as simple as, all right, and then the fight begins. You know, and you just leave it up to them because a lot of these guys really like the freedom of kind of – taking something and building it from scratch. You know, they know that these two characters, say, for example, are going to be fighting. Well, that, you know, all right, that's all they really need to know. Now they start to build from there. You know, they pull the images out of their own, out of their heads. Unless I have something specific that needs to happen in that particular drawing when I'm doing a comic script, then, you know, I'll put that in. But most of the time, especially an artist that I've worked with before or somebody who I trust, I just let them go wild, you know. I just let them do their thing because, you know, why tell them, you know, especially if they're good at what they do? Why instruct them, you know?
Well, did you have anybody draw these characters out so you could be looking at them and taking from there, or did they stay objects of your imagination?
They pretty much stayed objects of my imagination. Yeah, I had actually thought about, like, getting in touch with one of my comic book buddies and having him do some character designs and stuff like that. But it never really got that far. I mean, I just kind of threw myself into the book and kind of lost myself. And before I knew it, the book was being turned in and edited and the whole nine yards. So it was kind of like, you know, the book was done. It was kind of moot at that point to have designs and things, you know?
Well, now you've done and are doing other young adult series,
mm-hmm.
that are you know, texts that are narrative.
Sure.
Do you work the same way there? Do you ever have any of these things sketched out, or you know, can you strictly work within your?
Well, like for example, like I did a series called Billy Hoot and Owlboy,
mm-hmm.
for Delacorte also, and I worked with Eric Powell on that. He did the cover. He did the cover, and he did like I think it was like 10 illustrations for each of the books. And Eric and I are relatively close, and Eric's like this Eisner Award-winning artist. I mean, he does a book called The Goon for Dark Horse Comics, and he's just this amazing artist. And just because of the way he is, as I was writing these books, he was doing up character sketches. You know, I'd tell him something, and then all of a sudden I'd get these insane drawings, you know, via email. And, yeah, he was knocking them out of the park, you know, every single time. But, yeah, and I think that's – that was just because he was actually involved with the book. They had hired him to do the illustration. So, you know, as I was writing and sending him things and descriptions and having conversations with him, he was doing character sketches. So I had some artwork on the Billy Hooten books a lot of the time when I was writing those.
And if you had a short deadline, you know, if you had to write a story for one medium or the other, in a very short period of time.
Right.
Which could you do faster?
Oh, I could do a comic book script. I could probably, if I put my nose to it, I could probably do a really good comic book script in a couple of days.
Hmm.
Yeah, comic book script, again, it's such a visual medium that I can take those shortcuts, because once I'm done, I'm handing it over to somebody else who has to spend more time than I do.
I got it.
You know, a really good, fast artist probably only manages to do about a page or two a day, if that. So, you know, your average comic book is 22 pages, and so, you know, just thinking of it that way, it's going to take them a lot longer than it would take me, especially if I know what I'm doing. If this particular thing that I'm writing, this particular comic book that I'm writing, I would, you know, basically be able to just sit down and say, okay, I've got to accomplish this, 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 and this, and I can just kind of laser beam focus, you know, go right in and get that done. But, yeah, the artist is going to do most of the work.
And how do you decide? I mean, do you come up – it's interesting to me that you work in these two mediums. When you come up with a concept, how do you decide – whether it should be a narrative form, you know, like a young adult novel, or it should be comic book form?
Well, it's funny because, I mean, a good idea is a good idea. And then you just kind of sit and you look at it and you say, okay, where would this work the best? You know, like, for example, Billy Hooten originally was a comic book idea. That it was originally conceived as a comic book idea. But I just had so many stops and starts with the various comic book publishers and artists who were available and then not available. It just it kind of got put on the back burner so many times that I finally just kind of yanked it out of the file cabinet and said, you know what, this is going to be a book. I'm going to make this work as a book. And it worked beautifully as a book. I mean, not that it wouldn't have worked well as a comic, because it really would, I think, have worked as a comic too. But I think it worked really, really well as a book, as you know, also, so it really is one of those things where you just kind of have to look at where you think the best way to tell the story is what I'm saying. Is you know, it's like you look at it and you're like, you know what, this is such a visual piece that comics might serve this better, or man, I'd really love to get into these characters' heads. You know, and really, really define them and make them, you know, more and more real. I would go the narrative route.
Mm.
You know,
in retrospect, do you wish that Billy Hooten had wound up as a comic?
No, I think when I finally, did up my my proposal and my pitch in where I pretty much constructed it as a prose piece. It was like, wow, this is gonna rock, because I get to get into the head of a 12-year-old kid, and that just made it really, really fun, because it allowed me to kind of almost time travel back to that age and the types of things that I was into and the types of things that I was experiencing in elementary school, going into junior high school, and my love of comics and movies and monsters and all that craziness. So I think it became a much more complicated work than if it had been a comic book. I think if it had been just a comic book, it would have been goofy fun. Whereas the books are still goofy fun, but it also allowed me to be a little more layered and tell a little bit more of a complicated story.
Is The Fallen the only one of your concepts that's crossed over into another medium?
It's the only one that's crossed over that's actually been produced and made.
Okay.
I've had a ton of stuff optioned by Hollywood, but The Fallen is the only one that's actually been filmed and been on TV and everything like that.
Have you toyed with any of the Billy Hooten or any of the others going to comic book once they've been novels, or any of the comics coming back or going the other way?
That's funny, because I always think about it and then I get distracted with something else. it's kind of like, all right, I'm done with that. Now I'm moving on to the new projects. But if somebody ever came to me and said, "Oh, we'd love to do a Billy Hooten comic," I'd probably jump on it in a heartbeat. Hmm. But I've got so many irons in the fire as it is that I don't find myself going back to that. I'm always moving forward. or in other words, I've always got a deadline. So I find that, all right, I can't really think about that right now. I've got these three things that I need to get done,
And on the crass commercial side of things, which is the most profitable medium for you to work in?
Comics pays, depending on who's publishing. Like if you were working at like Marvel and DC or Dark Horse or something like that, the amount of time that's spent on crafting a script and writing a script and a comic book script, and the amount of time that I spend writing a novel, I spend much less time doing a comic book script, so that ends up being more profitable.
Hmm.
But I haven't really been doing all that much in terms of comics. I mean, my book plate is full. I'm getting more. I'm getting known as kind of like the YA guy, and as well as I do some adult stuff too. And that is becoming my thing. The comics are getting further and further down on the list. Not that I don't jump at the opportunity when I get the chance, but I'm taking more and more book work on. So I find myself doing that a lot more.
Hmm. Well, let's come full circle and come back to legacy.
Sure.
Was it hard to sell the publisher on this type of story, or do you get a you get bonus points because of what you've already accomplished and that they're willing to give you, more opportunity than maybe somebody they don't know?
I think it was a combination. I mean, I really do think, because it was the same same editor and same publisher, Delacourt, that did the Billy Hooten books.
So I
think they saw what I could do with a funny, wacky story. And I think when I did the pitch for Legacy, she was the first editor that I showed the pitch to. And I think she got it right away. I think she saw, like, all right, this is the flip side. We saw the fun and the wacky, and now here's the dark and serious.
Mm-hmm.
And also being familiar with my other work, like The Fallen and the sleeper books that I did over at Razorbill and stuff like that. I think she saw that I was, very capable of kind of flipping the whole fun comic book idea on its head,
And I didn't see any indication. Maybe I missed it. Is this intended as a one-off, or will there be more? Will we see more of Lucas in the years to come?
Well, I think I could definitely. I mean, waiting in the wings. I mean, I have definitely two more books. If they want them, see, publishing is in such an interesting place right now that nobody wants to take a chance on things.
Right.
So it's kind of like, you know, oh, this is a series idea. We really don't want a series. Why don't we do one? And if that does well, maybe we'll do more, you know, that type of thing. So, I mean, that's how I originally pitched it. I pitched it as, okay, here's the, you know, legacy. It's got a nice beginning, middle, and end. But if you guys are interested, I mean, there's two more books that could be done without batting an eye.
Got it.
So yeah. So if Legacy does well, people go out there and buy it and you know and like it, then there's a very good chance that we'll be seeing the next two installments.
Hmm. Now there's I had Kevin Anderson on the show.
Okay.
A few months ago, who's a guy who's had a lot of success doing kind of what you do, I think, in some ways, and you know sometimes he's more tied to commercial projects, but. You know, it seemed like a very interesting way to, you know, to make a living and to keep your hand in the comics and
sure.
and just generally that kind of world. Is there anyone particularly whose work, you know, you've enjoyed and who's kind of encouraged you, not them directly, but by reading their stuff, you went, yeah, you know, that's cool. I'd like to do more of that kind of thing.
You know, it's amazing when you see somebody like. This guy, Mike Mignola, immediately comes to mind.
Sure.
He's the creator of Hellboy. Mike is a tremendous writer, and he's also a tremendous artist. And you see him doing that kind of back and forth thing now.
Mm-hmm.
More in regards to writing comics and drawing comics, but recently he started to kind of extend his fingers outward a little. He worked with Chris Golden on a book about a year and a half ago called Baltimore. Which was this, like, ridiculously illustrated novel. It was, like, this beautiful illustrated novel. It wasn't a graphic novel. It was a novel that had, like, spot illustrations throughout the book.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just gorgeous. And that was really cool to see Mike kind of, go beyond the comic books and show that, you know, that his stuff could even translate into prose. You know, of course, you got Chris Golden on, you know, by your side also, and that can't hurt. You know, Chris and I have worked on a bunch of projects together, and he's an amazing writer. So, I mean, taking Mike by the hand and the two of them doing that book together was just a really cool thing. But yeah, he's a real inspiration. Mike's a real inspiration to me, and there are a lot of you know other writers working that you know. I admire greatly and say, yeah, you know, that guy's doing it right, you
mm-hmm.
know, so, yeah, I mean, I take inspiration from all these guys. I mean, I'm still an avid comic collector, I'm still a, you know, I buy books, I buy far too many books that are stacked up all over the house that I have every intention of reading, yeah, I mean, it's really cool to you know, to look around at comic book publishing and book publishing right now and see how many cool things are actually being done.
Mm-hmm.
And also, and actually to be a part of it. That's a cool thing too.
That would be a very cool thing.
Yeah.
Well, I just looked up and saw we're going to run out of time, but I wanted to ask you before you go about,
sure.
Working on the Bone series. So that's,
yes.
You know, that's untouched territory.
Territory, though. I am the first person ever to work with Jeff on, I did the Bone prequel, which was called Stupid, Stupid Rat Tales. I did that about like 5 or 6 years ago. And I think that's why I was still in the pipeline. So when Scholastic started to reprint the Bone material in color, when they reached the end of the Bone stories, it was kind of like, all right, once that's done, that's done. So I had been talking with Jeff, and I said, basically, you know, hey, look, you know, once your original comic book stories are printed in color and it looks nice and wonderful, why don't we take it to the next level? Why don't we go the route of, you know, more Bone stories? I said, you've created a Bone universe. You've got the Valley. I said, why don't we create some new characters and use some old characters and create new stories that take place in the Valley? And that's pretty much all I had to say. And I think I got the gears clicking inside his head, and we approached Scholastic, and yeah, we're doing a trilogy that I believe the first book will be released sometime in 2010. I'm writing the second one right now. And before any of that, the Stupid Rat Tales is now being collected by Scholastic, but it's going to have a new title. They're going to call it Tall Tales, Bone Tall Tales. And it's actually going to have about 30-something brand-new pages of Jeff Smith artwork and some new stories that I've written, some new stories that Jeff has written. And it's the whole Big Johnson Bone story, who's the founder of Boneville. It's a very, very tall tale, very tall tale, Paul Bunyan-type tall tale stuff. And I've written two new stories, and Jeff's written one new story. But it's going to be colored, and there's going to be new artwork, and the original Stupid Rat Tales is going to be colored and had some like nice tweaking done to it to make it even better. And it's going to be gorgeous. I mean, the fact that you're going to see brand new Jeff Smith artwork, you know, in the Bone universe after all this time is just amazing. I think people.
That's what I was kind of wondering. Was anyone really surprised that Jeff decided to go back to this?
I think he was surprised, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
I think it was one of those things when, you know, when I started to bring this stuff up, I think there, at first there was a little bit of, I don't know if I want to go there. But once, you know, I started telling him my ideas and things, especially about the novels, because he's going to do spot illustrations in the novels. Each of the novels is going to have like 15 to 20 brand new illustrations each book. But I think he liked that because he was kind of like, oh, I don't have to draw a whole comic. Oh, that's cool. I could just do like one really cool drawing, you know, depicting something from Tom's story. Oh, I like that. You know, so I think that kind of coaxed him back. And then, you know, since Scholastic had been reprinting the Bone comic book stuff anyway, it only made sense for them to do, you know, the stupid Rat Tail story because Jeff drew that. I just wrote it. You know, so, you know, it made sense. And Jeff had always wanted to do more Big Johnson Bone stories anyways to kind of give it that tall tale feel. So, mm-hmm. You know, it was kind of like, yeah, and I'll do that too. You know, it's like almost, you know, it's like, oh, I might as well, you know. So, yeah, that's extremely exciting. Oh, I'm really excited about that, yeah.
Well, this was great fun. And, folks, I want to let you know you can find Thomas E. Snegoski, or as I like to call him, Tom. You can find Tom's new young adult novel, Legacy, which is a lot of fun, especially if you enjoy comics and superheroes. You can find it in great bookstores everywhere or order it online at mrmedia.com. You can also check out his personal website, which is www.snegoski.com, and I could tease you and not tell you how to spell it. But I'm not going to do that. This is a full-service radio show, so it's SNIEGOSKI.com. And, Tom, thanks so much for joining us at Mr. Media today. It was a lot of fun.
No problem. I'd love to come back.
You're welcome anytime.
All righty.
Take care of yourself.
All right. You guys do, too.
Thanks, Tom.
All right, bye-bye.
And folks, for if you're thinking about writing an online review of Mr. Media, that would be great, maybe at iTunes or somewhere else. You can also cast a vote for Mr. Media. You can mark Mr. Media as one of your favorites, whether you listen on Blog Talk Radio, blogcritics.org, TrueSlant, Pointer Online, Digital Journal, Vox, Mediafly, Podfeed.net, Blueberry, Zencast, Zimbio, Current, or Odeo. And subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. Or subscribe to Mr. Media's blog on the Amazon Kindle Reader. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. That's A-N-D-E-L-M-A-N. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.twitter.com/andelman or facebook.com/andelman. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate when you give a piece of your day and come spend it with Mr. Media. Thanks for listening, everybody.